Welcome to Base by Base. Today, we're looking at something really fascinating, where ancient history, devastating pandemics, meet our own modern biology right down to the genetic level. We're talking about the plague, Yersinia pestis, one of the biggest killers humanity's ever known. But we're not just looking back. We're going to look inside ourselves at our genes to see how they might maybe offer some defense.
Exactly. It's a really compelling area. We tend to think of these huge historical pandemics as, you know, done and dusted in the past, but their legacy, it might still be active, subtly shaping our own genetics, influencing how we respond to pathogens today. It's evolution in action, really.
Right. And that brings us to today's focus. We're unpacking a really significant paper here. It identified a human receptor for Yersinia pestis that, well, nobody knew about before. This research was led by Dr. Rachel M. Keener and Dennis C. Coe, along with their colleagues. It came out in Cell Genomics back in August 2025. And what we want to do is explore how just one seemingly small genetic difference can potentially have these huge effects on immunity, and maybe surprisingly, how it connects to our susceptibility to other quite different diseases too. Okay, let's get into it. So before we dive right into Yersinia pestis itself, maybe you could set the stage a bit. Just how important is human genetic variation when we talk about susceptibility to infectious diseases generally?
Oh, it's incredibly important, a really big deal. You see, pandemics throughout history, they haven't just been tragic events. They've also been powerful engines of evolution. They act like massive selection pressures, favoring individuals who happen to have genetic variants that give them some kind of edge, some resistance.
Okay, like natural selection speeding up.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And we have some really clear examples, especially with viruses. Think about the CCR5 Delta 32 allele. That single genetic change gives people almost complete resistance to HIV-1 infection. It's a textbook case.
Right, I've heard of that one.
And there's another one, a mutation in the FUT2 gene. That protects against certain strains of Norwalk virus, you know, the stomach bug.
Mm-hmm.
So these examples show how genetics can block viral entry or change the response. But finding similar variations, clear ones, that affect bacterial entry receptors, that's been much harder to pin down.
Ah, interesting. So bacteria are trickier in that sense.
It seems so, or at least finding those specific genetic keys has been tougher, which makes this Y. pestis work quite noteworthy.
Okay, so if it's less common, how did Dr. Keener and her team actually manage it? How did they find these genetic links for Y. pestis? Sounds like looking for a needle in a haystack.
It really does. And they used a very clever high-throughput approach. They called it HIHOST. That stands for High-Throughput Human In Vitro Susceptibility Testing.
HIHOST.
Yeah, you can almost picture it like a pandemic in a plate system. It let them test how Y. pestis interacted with cells from lots of different people very quickly. They used nearly 1,000 different lymphoblastoid cell lines, LCLs for short.
1,000? Wow. What are LCLs exactly?
They're basically B cells, a type of immune cell, that have been immortalized using the Epstein-Barr virus. So they can grow continuously in the lab. This gives you a consistent, large-scale resource that captures a really wide range of human genetic diversity. It's a powerful tool for this kind of study.
Got it. So a way to test lots of genetic backgrounds efficiently. How did they measure if the bacteria were actually, you know, getting inside these different cells?
They had a neat assay for that. First, they tagged the Y. pestis bacteria with GFP green fluorescent protein. So the bacteria literally glow green.
Oh, okay. Standard trick.
Right. Then they used a modified version of something called a gentamicin protection assay. Gentamicin is an antibiotic, but it only kills bacteria outside the host cells. So they'd infect the LCLs for 4 hours, then add the gentamicin. Any bacteria still outside get killed off.
So only the ones that successfully invaded survive.
Exactly. Then they measured the remaining green fluorescence. A strong green signal meant lots of bacteria had made it inside, safe from the antibiotic. This gave them a quantitative measure of invasion for each cell line.
That's very elegant. So with all those cell lines, nearly 1,000, I assume they saw a lot of variation in how much invasion happened.
They did, yes.
And was that variation actually down to the genetics of the cells, or could it just be, you know, experimental noise?
That's a crucial question. They checked that very carefully. The differences they saw between cell lines were highly reproducible. They calculated a repeatability score of 0.90.
Which is very high, right? Almost perfect reproducibility.
Extremely high, yes.
Yeah.
It told them their measurements were solid. And importantly, they calculated that about 19% of that variation in invasion could be directly attributed to genetic differences between the individuals the LCLs came from.
19%, so a definite genetic component.
Definitely. And they also found something else quite interesting. Why pestes seem to prefer invading B cells, the cells marked with CD19 plus cell. Sometimes it invaded them 5 to even 18 times more efficiently than T cells, which are marked by CD3 plus cell.
Really? I thought the focus was usually on cells like macrophages.
Often, yes. But this finding highlighted B cells as potentially a really important target for invasion, maybe more than previously thought.
Okay, so B cells are key targets, and genetics plays a role. What was the big genetic discovery then? Did their big screen point to a specific gene or variant?
It absolutely did. They ran a cellular genome-wide association study, a GWAS, basically searching the whole genome for variations linked to invasion levels. And when they focused specifically on non-synonymous variants, those are the changes in DNA that actually alter the protein sequence.
Right, the ones likely to affect function.
Exactly. They found one single SNP that's a single nucleotide polymorphism, a one-letter change in the DNA code that stood out dramatically. It's called RS228-2284. This SNP sits right inside the gene for a protein called Fc receptor-like 3, or FcRL3.
FcRL3.
Okay.
And the link was incredibly strong. The p-value was 9 times 10 to the minus 8.
Oh, wow, that's tiny. So very unlikely to be chance.
Vanishingly unlikely. Less than 1 in 10 million. It was a very clear signal. Specifically, people carrying the C version, the minor allele, of this SNP showed significantly less invasion of Y pestes into their cells.
Okay, let's unpack that. FcRL3. What is this protein normally doing? And how does this specific variant, RS228-2824, actually stop Y pestes from getting in?
Right, so FcRL3, it's what's called a type I transmembrane glycoprotein. Basically, a protein stuck in the cell membrane, mostly found on B cells. Before this study, people knew it could bind to antibodies, and it was thought to play a role in regulating B cell activity.
But not in letting bacteria in.
No, its role in pathogen uptake was completely unknown. So the researchers did a key experiment. They took HeLa cells, a common lab cell line that doesn't normally make it FcRL3, and they made them produce it.
And what happened? They saw a big increase in both Y pestes sticking to the outside of the cells, the attachment, and in the bacteria actually getting inside the invasion. They used fancy microscopy to tell the difference. Bacteria stuck outside looked dimmer green, while those safely inside glowed brighter. This really showed FcRL3 could act as a receptor for invasion.
So FcRL3 definitely helps the bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
But is it the only way in? If you get rid of FcRL3 completely, are the bacteria blocked entirely?
Great question. They tested that too, using CRISPR gene editing to knock out FcRL3 in the LCLs. And what they found was that knocking out FcRL3 caused a moderate decrease in attachment and invasion. Significant, but not a complete start.
Ah, okay. So it helps, but it's not essential.
Exactly. That suggested functional redundancy. Basically, other proteins might be doing a similar job, providing backup routes for the bacteria.
Like other doors the bacteria can use.
Precisely. And they looked into that. They found that other members of the same FcRL protein family, specifically FcRL4, FcRL5, and FcRL6, could also increase Y pestis attachment, and FcRL5 also significantly boosted invasion.
So the bacteria might be targeting a whole family of related proteins on B cells.
Mm.
Clever.
It seems that way. It's a multi-pronged approach, potentially.
So given this family connection, what did they find out about the nuts and bolts, the molecular details? What specific parts of FcRL3 are doing the work for attachment and invasion?
They really dug into the protein structure. For the initial attachment, they found that specific regions called the first and second Ig-like C2 domains were crucial, especially one bit called EGLD1.
EGLD1.
Yes. And they showed how critical it was with a neat trick. They took XCRL1, another family member that doesn't normally help Y pestes attach, and they just inserted that EGLD1 piece into it.
And what happened?
That modified FcRL1 suddenly could significantly increase attachment. It proved EGLD1 was the key sticky part.
Okay, that's attachment. What about the actual invasion, the getting swallowed by the cell?
For that, they found the action shifts to the inside part of the FcRL3 protein. There's a signaling motif there called an ITAM.
An ITAM.
Yeah, think of it like an on switch. When Y pestis binds on the outside, this switch gets flipped on the inside. It then recruits and activates an enzyme called SYK. SYK acts like a messenger, triggering the cell's machinery to actually engulf the bacterium, a process called phagocytosis.
So binding outside flips an ITAM switch inside, which calls SYK to make the cell eat the bacteria.
You've got it. And they showed this experimentally, adding more SYK boosted invasion when FCRL3 was present. Blocking SYK with an inhibitor significantly reduced invasion. It clearly mapped out that pathway.
Okay, that makes sense. Attachment domain outside, signaling domain inside. Now, back to that genetic variant, RS2282284. How does it mess up this whole process? Where does it fit in?
Right, this is the key link. That RS2282284 SNP causes one amino acid change in the FCRL3 protein. At position 721, an asparagine becomes a serine, N721S.
And where is position 721?
It's right next door to a really important tyrosine residue, Y722, which is part of that ITAM switch, or a related motif. It's in a critical spot for signaling.
Oh, okay. So it's right near the switch.
Exactly. And their experiments showed that changing the ITAM itself, or mutating that key Y722 residue, or introducing the N721S change from the protective SNP, all of these things significantly reduced that SYK-mediated invasion.
So that single amino acid swap, N721S, makes the ITAM SYK pathway less efficient.
That seems to be the case. Interestingly, they saw that SYK could still be recruited to the site where FCRL3 was bound to Y-pestes, even with the N721S variant, but it seemed like maybe SYK bound, but couldn't effectively trigger the downstream engulfment process, like the switch was sticky or didn't quite connect properly because of that nearby change.
So the signal gets muffled somehow.
That's a good way to put it. And just to confirm the direct interaction, they also showed that the FCRL proteins themselves, purified, could directly bind to Y. pestis bacteria. It wasn't just an indirect effect.
Okay, this is really fascinating, but also a bit puzzling. If Y. pestis is so dangerous, why would it evolve to use an immune receptor on B cells to get inside? B cells are supposed to help fight infection, aren't they? Seems like a strange strategy.
It does seem counterintuitive at first glance, absolutely. But the researchers proposed a very plausible hypothesis for this. They suggest Y. pestis might be hijacking these FCRL proteins on B cells to create a kind of lymphocyte niche.
A niche? Like a safe house?
Kind of, yes. B cells are incredibly numerous, especially in our lymphatic system, lymph nodes, spleen, etc. By getting inside B cells, particularly early in the infection, before the bacterium really ramps up its major virulence weapons, like its type 3 secretion system,
okay,
it might be able to hide from other immune cells like neutrophils and macrophages, which are much better equipped to kill bacteria directly.
So it uses B cells as Trojan horses, almost.
Potentially, yes. It could allow the bacteria to survive, maybe replicate a bit, and then travel from the initial infection site, say a flea bite on the skin, to the lymph nodes. That's where the bubonic plague, the buboes, actually develops. It could be a critical step for dissemination.
It's got the killingly clever strategy. Wow. Okay, so this variant, RS2282284, give some protection against this invasion strategy for plague. Does it do anything else? Does it affect our health today, given that plague isn't the threat it once was?
This is where the story takes another really surprising turn. It turns out this RS2282284 variant seems to be pleiotropic, meaning it affects more than one thing.
Pleiotropic.
Okay, get this. The exact same C allele, the one that reduces Y. pestis invasion, has also been associated in other studies with a significantly lower risk of developing chronic hepatitis C virus infection, specifically in Japanese populations where this was studied.
Wait, really? Hepatitis C? That's a virus completely different from plague bacteria.
Exactly. A virus that primarily infects the liver, not B cells usually. Although, interestingly, hep C has been shown to infect B cells sometimes. And the statistical analysis they did, called colocalization, strongly suggested with a probability around 78% that it's likely the same underlying genetic cause, the RS2282284 variant itself, that's responsible for both the reduced plague invasion and the reduced risk of chronic hep C.
That's incredible. One genetic variant influencing defense against both the Black Death bacterium and a modern liver virus.
It's pretty stunning, isn't it? It hints at potentially some shared mechanism involving FCRL3 on B cells that we just don't fully understand yet.
So if this variant protects against two major diseases, why isn't it more common? You mentioned the protective C allele is the minor allele, right? Only about 6% globally.
That is the big question, isn't it? If it's so beneficial, why hasn't natural selection made it much more frequent?
Yeah, it seems like it should be everywhere.
Well, it likely points to balancing selection. This means that while the C allele might be good in some contexts, fighting plague or hep C, it might have disadvantages in others. Remember, FCRL3 isn't just sitting there waiting for pathogens. It has normal jobs in the immune system, like regulating B cell activation. Maybe altering its function with the N721S change has some subtle negative trade-offs.
Like maybe slightly weaker B-cell responses to other things? Or some other effect?
Possibly. We don't know for sure, but it's a common theme in evolution. There's rarely a free lunch. It's always a balance. And intriguingly, there's another SNP in FCRL3, a different one called RS3761959, that is linked to autoimmune diseases like Graves' disease and rheumatoid arthritis.
Okay.
But that SNP doesn't seem to affect Y. pestis invasion, so it suggests different parts of the FCRL3 protein affected by different variants might be involved in these distinct processes, infection versus autoimmunity. The Y722 region affected by our plague SNP seems specific to the infection side of things.
Fascinating. It's like different knobs on the same machine controlling different functions.
That's a good analogy, yes.
So wrapping this up then, we've seen how this one variant, RS2282284, in the FCRL3 gene gives us this amazing window into how our bodies fight or maybe get exploited by Yersinia pestis. It reveals this mechanism where the bacteria might actually co-opt part of our immune system, the B cells, using FCRL3 as a doorway to hide and maybe spread.
And the link to hepatitis C protection just adds this whole other layer. It really drives home how interconnected things are in our genome and how echoes of past selective pressures, like ancient plagues, might still be influencing our health today in ways we're really only just starting to figure out.
It really makes you think about that long evolutionary shadow, the history written in our DNA. Definitely something to ponder. This episode is based on an open access article under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License, CCBY 4.0. You'll find the DOI and a link to the license in the episode description.